Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains September 19th through the 24th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Podcast.
Can you believe it?
Here's your host, Terry Cushman.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another episode. Of the Benny and the Betts podcast covering Boston Red Sox baseball. For everyone joining us tonight, via iTunes, wherever, you can also find us on Skype, Stitcher, literally everywhere. So we appreciate you guys tuning in. We will be covering a lot of Red Sox related topics tonight, as well as some MLB wide hot stove. Yankees got Gerrit Cole. I'm sure we'll have plenty to say about that. Also touch on the Angels signing Anthony Rendon. Joining me tonight is two new permanent co-hosts, starting first with Charlie Smith. Charlie, how are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you. How are you, sir?
Not doing too bad. Not a very eventful week. We'll get into that, but you're going to be with us basically full time throughout the 2019 season on the Sunday show. So we're happy to have you.
I'm very happy to be joining. I'm super, super excited to discuss all things Red Sox related, cause some commotion and get some emotion out of hopefully some people who are going to be participating in comments and whatnot. So it should be good.
I'm usually the guy that extracts the emotions, usually negative ones and all kinds of hate tweets. But also joining us tonight, this will basically be his first regular show. Jason Kelly will be with us. You'll be on the midweek show. Covering, you know, whatever series wraps up, usually on the Wednesday or Thursday. So it's good to have you. Why don't you get the audience a little familiar with you, Jason?
Sure. Yeah. I'm from Boston, obviously, born and raised here. And obviously, lifelong Red Sox fan. I work in tech, so I do a lot of stuff with mobile apps and social media and stuff. So that allows me to be on Twitter a lot and see Yankee fans chirping and Red Sox fans chirping back at them. And it's always fun to join in that little fray sometimes. So I'm excited to have another forum to be able to do that right here. So it should be a lot of fun.
Yeah. I mean, I'm addicted to Twitter. I used to think Twitter was stupid. You know, I was a Facebook guy and I looked at the Twitter app and I'm like, this is well, I'm trying not to swear anymore. It comes out. And if it comes out for you guys, you know, so be it. But I'm like, this is stupid. This app, it's dumb. I don't know how to use it. And I didn't touch it again for like 5 years. And I deeply regret that. But I could almost, like, on a job application, you know, where do you live? And, you know, just write Twitter. And there you go. So it's definitely good to have you guys. So we'll just dive right into it. And at the beginning of the week, I tweeted out, I said, Chaim Bloom's primary goal by the end of the week is to not still have Dave Dombrowski's baseball team. And he still has Dave Dombrowski's baseball team. One minor addition, we'll get to that. But what are you guys' thoughts on just the week in general, as far as the Red Sox go? Plenty of excitement elsewhere, but as far as the Red Sox, you know, little disappointment that's still nothing?
Yeah, as far as the Red Sox are concerned, it's been a snooze fest. I mean, there's literally been nothing except for Jose Peraza, which isn't exactly going to light the city on fire. So, yeah, it's been just dull, and I'm shocked that they haven't done more.
I'll say this, while Jose Peraza isn't necessarily a Jose who, we know who he is. We know what he can do. He had a much more productive year. I want to say like 2018. 2019 was just kind of like the Red Sox, a disaster. Just nothing went right for him. So maybe a change of scenery will be good. But honestly, like, I'm not expecting the Red Sox to be major buyers this year, only because of the albatross contracts that they've got this year. You've got still David Price, who's in mid contract talks. Potential trade rumors. You got Chris Sale, who got a ridiculous contract extension, and the impending question with Mookie Betts, what to do with him. So I wasn't expecting anything crazy, but you know, at least our name is out there.
Yeah. And the one name that apparently attracted the most interest of anyone is David Price. And I guess of the other names that we could have traded, you know, Mookie Betts, obviously he's been the elephant in the room, you know, for the last couple of months. You know, Bradley could be on the trade block. But arguably, if we do kind of want to win, wouldn't David Price be the biggest contributor to that, assuming our pitching needs to be better than last year?
Yeah, I mean, if he's healthy, sure. The first half of last season, he was incredibly valuable. I mean, he was a true number two behind Chris Sale, and was, you know, pitching consistently and kept his mouth shut. And then he got hurt, and then he picked a fight with Eckersley, and then his second half was a disaster. It was a total train wreck on and off the field. So, yeah, he does help you win if he can stay healthy and stay consistent, but how can you trust David Price at this point to do either of those things? And honestly, as much as I don't want to see pitchers going out the door for this team because we need pitching help, him I would not mind. If you've got teams that are interested in a 34-year-old who's a pain in the ass who can't stay healthy, then I think you got to make a deal, because it's not working here. He hates you. You hate him. It's not working. Just make a deal.
I think when it comes to players that are going to make the biggest impact for the Red Sox, Terry, you absolutely make a great point. You know, David Price is proven. You know, he's got over 2,000 innings logged in the league. Hard to find any pitchers with quality that have done that and done more work. But David Price, after signing that ridiculous contract exceeding $200 million, hasn't really lived up to it. I mean, he had one great year, but there was a lot of miles on that arm. And he's always done really well in small market teams. He did really well at the Trop. He did well in Toronto. Did okay in Detroit, but as soon as it came to Boston, it was one solid year. And don't get me wrong, people gave him a lot of crap because it wasn't a fantastic year. He still shelled over 200 innings, did great work, and then the injuries, and I think the age, the Eckersley issue, sit your behind down, all that fun stuff. And at this point, a change of scenery would probably be best for both parties, both for the Red Sox and for Price. The Red Sox right now are not built to win for multiple reasons. And trading away David Price would only signal the beginning of what I think is going to be a rebuild mode.
Do you guys get the impression that ownership just wants to get rid of this guy, you know, and not necessarily for the on the field? Well, a little bit maybe with the on the field, because he played hooky last year, I think at least twice against the Yankees, maybe even a third time. So that's a little bit annoying, but you have the off the field drama, and I just feel like maybe early in the 28 season when the carpal tunnel Fortnite controversy happened, I think ownership was just like, this guy is just not working out here. Like, he is just not fit for this market. And I think that's a huge motivator. His ERA in the 4 years he's pitched is 381. And I think you could make the case that he could be a potential bounce back candidate, especially if they go back to normal baseballs and some of these guys can pitch to contact without worrying about, you know, a routine pop fly going over the fence. And so the fact that his numbers aren't terrible and they want to trade him and possibly even eat money, I mean, what does that say about how they feel about him?
Yeah, it, to me, it says they're sick of him, just like we are. So yeah, thanks for helping us win a World Series. Thanks for finally getting over that hump. But you're a pain in the neck, and we would actually rather pay you to go away than pay you your full salary to stay here. So yeah, exactly. Just don't let the your wrist, you know, bother you anymore here. Go, let it bother you somewhere else.
I mean, I play Fortnite. I'm not great. I know I play with a couple kids that are pretty good. I honestly do not know how much Fortnite you'd have to play to get carpal tunnel. I mean, my wrist hurts just from waving. So maybe you get carpal tunnel or some kind of wrist injury from playing too much Fortnite, but there's got to be something else going on. You can attribute it to mileage. You know, a lot of work, and he's on the wrong side of 30. Something's got to give, and you're picking fights with the wrong people.
I hate to bring this up again because I've beat it to death the last couple of years, but I think the carpal tunnel thing was just, they had to say something. You know, he was ducking out of a Yankee start, and everybody knew he was going to get shelled if he made the start. And I was looking forward to it. As much as I love to see the team win, I love seeing David Price suffer, being a hater. And, you know, obviously in May, the division isn't locked up, but we were feeling pretty good regardless. And they send him to New York right away. We were in New York. They send him to Boston right away. And I forget what the problem was. I don't know what the initial injury was, but when he gets to Boston, they had the shoulder looked at, they had the elbow looked at, they had the hand looked at. Like, they left no stone unturned. And I think that was like the Red Sox message to, you know, to him, saying we're getting right to the bottom of this and there's going to be no excuses when you come back. And I don't think they found anything. I think they found that he was fine, and they couldn't say that though. So carpal tunnel became, oh, he has carpal tunnel. That's what it was all along. That's what it was. David Price is a guy who's used to getting his way. He's used to calling the shots, and I think the Red Sox were basically, you know, taking that away from him. They're like, you know, like I said, we're getting to the bottom of this, and you know, if everything comes back, you're going to play ball, and that's the way it is. And then he does come back that next Saturday. He pitched a gem in Toronto, which happens to be one of his best ballparks. But I think the carpal tunnel thing was a giant sham.
It probably was. Yeah. I mean, x-rays can't reveal that he's, you know, a wuss bag who didn't want to face the Yankees because he knew he was going to get his lips ripped off. So he wanted to wait and pitch in the Rogers Center. So yeah, I mean, it probably was an excuse, but it just snowballed from there because this guy has so many issues to start with that, you know, something like that, it's bound to just get worse and worse. So, you know, this year, if he does come back, it'll be another, you know, random injury that he bags out of a Yankees game or an Astros game or something with, you know, it's just going to keep going.
I'm trying to look up right now, what is his record against the Yankees for his career?
It was okay before he got to Boston, but then when he got to Boston, his ERA in Yankee Stadium was almost double digits.
That's what it was, because I don't remember him being bad. It was when he became a member of the Red Sox. I genuinely feel this. There are some players that can play in big market teams. The pressure does not bother them. You have the Mike Trouts. You have the Mookie Betts out there. But a player like this, it's not like Chuck Knoblauch getting the yips bad. It's a weird kind of emotional, kind of like Zach Greinke, who has like anxiety, where he can do everything right. Because David Price is not a bad pitcher. He is a good pitcher. And if he goes to another team, a la Cincinnati, Chicago, the White Sox, not the Cubs, because there's a little bit more pressure to play over there, I think he's going to do very well. And I think if you put him in a National League team where every ninth out should be a strikeout, I think David Price could find a resurgence for his career. And this could be a great opportunity for a team out there that is trying to build a contender. Again, Cincinnati's doing that right now. Buy low, have some of that contract chewed up, have someone who can display, for the lack of a better term, leadership. And definitely someone that can eat innings and get the job done. I think he could do it. I think he could do great things in Cincinnati.
That's an interesting team, and they're extremely unpredictable with the moves that they've made. So I could definitely see that. I could see the Padres or the Dodgers. You know, the Padres didn't seem to get too caught up in the you know, winter meetings as far as pitching went, but he does have a connection with the Dodgers with Friedman, who was the Tampa GM. So a little bit of history there. Angels, we'll get to them in a little bit, but there's the Joe Madden connection. Their rotation is just straight garbage. They haven't even replaced the guy who, you know, died of a drug overdose. There's a connection with Atlanta with Alex Anthopoulos. He was with the Jays when he acquired Price from the Tigers. So some connections there. The Reds are an interesting possibility. The Rangers have checked in. Jason, who do you think's a couple good dance partners? If you had to pick two teams, who would you go with?
I think the leaders in the clubhouse are probably San Diego and the Rangers. The Rangers seem aggressive about wanting to add pitching. And they've actually been in on pretty much everyone. Every big name free agent, the Rangers, they've come up. They were in on Strasburg. They're even in on Cole a little bit. So they've been aggressive. They want to add pitching because they know they desperately need it. I think San Diego, though, is the leading, like they're probably the best match for David Price because it's a big ballpark. It's a, you know, West Coast team. It's not a big market team. You know, they need some veteran pitching in that rotation. I think they've got guys that they're wanting to deal with too. You know, there was talk about them dealing Will Myers. Not that I'm a big Will Myers guy, but if you can get someone like that back who can, he can play first base, he can play a little bit of the outfield. He's not terrible. So that would be a good mix for them. I think either San Diego or the Rangers is where he should go.
Those are good picks, Charlie.
I was thinking about Cincinnati. The Reds have already made a couple of additions. They added Moose. They added Peraza is gone. He's now here. They've already started making a couple of little tweaks, but you look at the team that they had last year, and I'm really focusing on 2-3 players that could really blossom in 2020 and beyond. So you have Jesse Winkler, who a lot of people were high on before the season started. I drafted Winkler in fantasy baseball and thought, I got one of the bag boys. And it started off really great, and then the wheels kind of fell off. But it could have been just kind of the rookie slump as opposed to sophomore slump. There's Nick Senzel, who's there, who's another player that a lot of people were high on. Who came up the farm and just really lit it up. And then there was, is it Aquino? he has a really unique name. So Aristides Aquino, who blew up and I believe set the record for the most number of home runs in X amount. I think he had like 9 or 8 home runs in 10 games. This guy was clubbing them out like it was like a wiffle ball game. They don't have the highest payroll. So just checking, the Reds last year, 2019, had a payroll of $126 million. That's like, you know, half of the Red Sox. Just kidding. But it's a fraction of what it could be. And adding David Price could be interesting. It doesn't seem that far-fetched because I feel like the Reds in that division, there's really only a couple teams that are going to be competition. The Pirates are the Pirates, so that's that. They've traded away everything that was good. The Cubs will be relevant, kind of, maybe. Cardinals always, for some odd reason, seem to be relevant. Brewers, I think, could be good again. But if the Reds add a couple of trade chips, that could be interesting. I've never been a fan of the Padres, never liked them. I think they have a great baseball park. It's great if you want to have a family experience, not if you want to see a baseball game. There are a couple of players on the team that I can't stand. But also partially because I can't stand their general manager there. I think Preller is a joke. Could he blossom in San Diego? Maybe. It could happen because if he becomes the one of the starters there, he won't assume the number one spot. So maybe he could blossom in the two spot. I'll say Reds 1, Padres 2.
Well, the Reds, you make a good point. I mean, the division isn't really settled. I don't think the Cubs are going to really do anything, and I think they're very much in a situation like the Red Sox. They're going to kind of look at this as a transitional year. They're hoping to cash in on Chris Bryant as soon as his grievance with the union gets or his grievance against the Cubs gets resolved with the union arbiter. And, you know, I think the Cardinals are going to be good. I think they're going to add. I think they got a very good rotation as it is. Could be a good Mookie team. Like, that's a team that could use Mookie Betts. I don't know if they'll get in on those sweepstakes. But yeah, so, I mean, the NL Central, I mean, the Reds could certainly be a force there. And I think with the Padres, there's a lot of pressure to finally, you know, contend. And the Rockies are taking a step back and, you know, the Dodgers are obviously going to be good, but they should, you know, at least put themselves in a position to compete for a wild card. And I think they definitely need a starter, you know, in the form of someone, even if it's not David Price. You know, Hyunjin Ryu is still out there, who's kind of an attractive buy low option, and a couple other guys as well. But yeah, I think the Dodgers could probably use him, even though they're looking at Bumgarner. It's just tough. There's a lot of teams that are going to compete this year, and I think the American League is also going to be a little bit more competitive. Like, we basically knew which 5 teams there were going to be last year, and I think the Indians are going to get back in the race. I think Oakland's still going to be there. Who knows with the Angels, but I think more teams are gonna be a little competitive. So, one other piece of news today: Rick Porcello has signed a 1-year, $10 million deal with the Dumpster Fire Mets. Jason, what are your thoughts on that? Like, and start off by saying, you know, where are you with Porcello? Like, were you a Porcello guy? Like,
I was sort of a Porcello guy. I know that's a little bit of a cop out answer, but like, I wasn't fully in on him, but I did appreciate his dependability in the fact that, like, you knew every 5 days he was going to take the ball. He was going to go out there and give you at least 5-6 innings. Now, you don't know what kind of 5-6 innings you're going to get. He might give up 5 runs in the first and then, you know, just kind of cruise the rest of the way. I mean, that's kind of what it was. But at least he went out there and competed. You know, he was the antithesis to David Price in that way. So I appreciated him for that. But I'm glad that he's gone. I'm glad that the Red Sox didn't, you know, try to bring him back on a make good deal like this. As far as his new landing spot, the Mets, I mean, good luck. He's now going to be pitching in probably the toughest division in baseball. And that is not a very good team over there in New York. So I don't know. I don't know how he's going to do. He might have a little bit of a bounce back year, but yeah, ultimately I saw that deal. So you know what? Good for him. I'm glad he got his money. He's, you know, he's trying to do a make good deal, trying to bounce back. We'll see what happens, but I'm not going to miss him terribly. Yeah.
Oh, please pick me. Oh, please pick me.
Go ahead, man.
Oh my God. Thank God he is gone. This was one of the first mistakes that ownership did, was give this bum 4 years and over $80 million. I'm so glad that he's gone. When I heard $10 million New York, I said, oh my God, we don't have to deal with that BS again. Granted, yes, absolutely correct. Every 5 days, you knew he was going to give you at least six innings and probably no less than seven runs allowed, which was my biggest issue with Porcello. You knew that two to three of the first batters he faced were probably going to score, which kind of set the team up for failure. Last year, I was adamant, and I said this with Terry, and I forget who was it I was with, but I said I would take E-Rod over Porcello, and I was the only one that said that. I'm so glad that he's gone. I bought absolutely no shares of Rick Porcello last year. Rick Porcello was the younger, not as sexy version of Josh Beckett, who had one good year followed by a crap year, one good year followed by a crap year. And I'm looking at it. Last year, 14 and 12, didn't do great. His ERA was over 5.5. That's so bad. Give me the ball, coach. Let me go in there. I have just as good a chance to do as good, maybe better. And I can't throw 90, 80. It was just – It wasn't working. And I mean, the year that he won the Cy Young note, thank you. You did great work, and I cannot take that away from you. Nothing gave me greater pleasure than knowing that Justin Verlander's wife had something to talk about, not about herself, and saying about how he got screwed again. You did it. Great job. But since then, nightmare. I'm so glad he's gone. This team was going to go nowhere with Rick Porcello. Yes, we got an innings eater. Bye-bye.
I wasn't really a Porcello guy from the start. If you go back to that winter, let's see, that was the 2014 coming into 2015 offseason, and I wanted Cole Hamels so bad, and that was the winter Sherrington wouldn't give up anybody. And, you know, Porcello was brought in because he had a nice ground ball rate, so did Justin Masterson, so did Wade Miley. That's why they came here. And, you know, Sherrington apparently thought he was going to pull off this genius, you know, outside the box strategy. And that season was bad. But also, I remember a headline coming out the day before opening day in 2015. And it said that Rick Porcello wasn't going to negotiate an extension with the Red Sox once the season started, because we were getting him for the final year of his deal. So when he said he wouldn't negotiate an extension, I laughed my ass off. I'm like, what is this guy with a career 4-something ERA? What kind of leverage does he think he has? And I'm like, thank goodness he didn't get an extension. Next morning, Rick Porcello gets a 4-year extension after the final year of his deal. I was so pissed. He sucked that year. They had to lie about an injury that summer just to get him out of the rotation, and the season was over by that point anyway. I think Lovello was even managing the team because Farrell was on his cancer leave. And I just thought, wow, this guy is just, oh, man. I was so mad, and I was still mad we didn't get Hamels, and Sherrington got fired right around that time, and then Dombrowski came in, and then, of course, the Cy Young year, and you had to figure a week ago, they traded Porcello's catcher. He can't pitch to Vasquez, so maybe that should have been the writing on the wall. But, you know, Jason, you bring up the point where he is an innings eater. You know, he's not going to get injured. He's a body that can go out there and take bullets, you know, if you need him to. And he did that, but he was just so frustrating because he could pitch a gem and then he could just get absolutely destroyed. And it was just an uncomfortable roller coaster. And I just, you know, I think we need to refresh the chemistry a little bit. And looks like Holt might not be coming back. We'll get into that in a few minutes. Looks like Price won't be here. Porcello won't be here. I'm probably missing another player too. Moreland and Pierce. So it's going to be a different team with a different vibe. And I think that's healthy. I think you need to do that every 3 or 4 years. And we just got rid of a guy in Dombrowski who notoriously loves keeping the band together. And Detroit's about to have their fifth consecutive non-competitive season and might have one or two more after this because of the damage Dombrowski did. So I'm interested to see what Chaim Bloom does, but I personally won't miss Porcello. You know, I was entertained when he punched out the two TVs. Apparently he had a naked ice bath, you know, during the World Series, you know, celebration there. So he was a positive influence in the clubhouse, but he's going to an absolute dumpster fire of a team. And, I hope for his sake, he has a good year and boosts his value and gets a, you know, a multi-year deal next year, but I'm not going to miss him.
I remember you, cause you've mentioned Cole Hamels before. More than once, this isn't the first time you've mentioned it.
I like Cole Hamels.
You bought shares of him, and I respect that. Now, I was very frustrated, and I wrote an article about this, about how I said the Red Sox absolutely blew it by trading for Porcello in the first place because they got – now, no one could have ever predicted what was going to happen to Yoenis Céspedes and his injury history after the fact. Was an absolute nightmare. No one could have predicted that. But I thought at the time when they got rid of Yoenis Céspedes for Rick Porcello, that was a really stupid decision because I would have rather had Yoenis Céspedes that year than Rick Porcello. And the Red Sox, in their infinite wisdom, decided and thought, yeah, let's bring on Pablo Sandoval, someone whose numbers are getting worse as the years go on, who continues to suck every year. Let's bring him to Boston. You know what? We'll do you one better. We're not going to bring over the Panda. We're going to bring over someone that we trade to get Josh Beckett, too. We're going to get Hanley Ramirez. You know who we don't want to get? Max Scherzer.
Imagine if the Red Sox were just willing to do that in 2015. They had the means to do it, but that was their Lucchino was still with the team that year, so you know they didn't want to spend the money because he was over 30, but Here's another thing. This makes me want to puke every time I think of this. Lester was lowballed. He was offered $70 million over 4 years with the Red Sox. He said he was willing to take a discount before that offer. And the comp that kept getting brought up through the media was Homer Bailey. If you just give him Homer Bailey money, he'll sign the extension. And Bailey signed, I think, with the Reds at the time for 5 years, $110 million. And Cole Hamels coming into the 2015 season was owed exactly $110 million. That was the balance of his Phillies contract. So that's $220 million for both Lester and Hamels. But then a year later, we pay almost that exact same figure to David Price, one pitcher who shits his pants in the postseason. Price got 217. So for $3 million more, you could have had two proven postseason guys and just the value there. And I get that Hamels wouldn't have been an ace with us, so to speak, but he basically would have filled the void that we lost with Lackey. He would have given us John Lackey-type production, very stable, you know, with a robust offense that we have had, you know, over the last, you know, 7 or 8 years. I just think he would have fit well here, but instead we got Price and we got Porcello, and 2018 still happened, so, you know, we don't have a ton to complain about, but.
You know what's amazing about Homer Bailey was after that contract that he got, which was ridiculous because he was always bad, minus that year, he never lived up. It was the Kevin Brown contract, but worse. It was so bad. 2 years he didn't play. And then 1 year he won one game and lost 14. Ouch.
He got like all kinds of bad after that contract. It was actually shocking to see how bad he got.
So bad.
And he was injured quite a bit as well, wasn't he? He spent a lot of time with the DL.
So between 2015 and 2016, he started 8 games, compiled a 2-4 record. The following 2 years, he pitches in 38 games, wins 7, and loses 23 with an ERA over 6.25 average. Ouch.
Yeah, that's not good. I think he did kind of get into a groove last season with Oakland, but of course
he did.
Yeah, but it, like you said, just one of the worst contracts in recent memory. But yeah, but the Lester contract worked out pretty good for the Cubs, though. I was looking up some stats for, you know, Lester and Verlander and Scherzer and Cole, and all of them, outside of their rookie year, all but 1 year of their career have started at least 30 games. And Lester's just been an absolute horse. So, you know, the Red Sox really botched that one. But anyway, so Porcello's gone, and, you know, I don't have any ill will, but I won't miss him. I think Charlie agrees. Jason will miss him a little. Maybe I'll miss him, you know, in July when we run out of bodies or whatever. You know, because Sale's on the DL and of all these arms falling off or whatever, you know, and we got Brian Johnson
again
in there. I don't know. I just come to expect it at this point. But so the Red Sox to counter the Yankees, Gerrit Cole signing brings in Jose Peraza today, a infielder who comes from the Reds, who Homer Bailey was with. I don't have his numbers up. I know 2018 was a really good season for him. Last year, he kind of fell off, had a 239 average. His OBP was in the high twos, not great. So what do we need to know about Jose Peraza?
Well, I guess the one benefit to him is he's still young. He's 25 years old. So I do like that aspect of it, that the Red Sox got younger. They didn't go out and get some aging middle infielder because they've already got one starting at second base, so they don't certainly need any more. But yeah, I mean, Peraza's rookie year it was his sophomore year, 2018, he was really good, 288 average, got on base pretty well, 326 on base percentage. You know, he's fast, he can steal bases, he can play multiple positions. Last year was tough. I mean, finished 239, actually ended up getting sent to the minors at the very end of the season, which he got sent to the minors by the Reds, who, you know, had nothing going on. That's a really bad sign. But it's, you know, it's a 1 year deal, $3 million. So he's a young kid who, you know, wants to bounce back, wants to prove that, you know, he was worth all the hype when he was first coming up with the Reds. He was a highly touted prospect. You know, he was someone that they thought would be on the right side of their infield for numerous years. So it's a nice kind of make good deal for him, and I think it's good for the Red Sox. I do wish they were just bringing back Brock Holt, because you know what you get with Brock Holt, and I can't imagine he's going to make a ton more than $3 million. We'll see what happens with Holt, but you know, I feel like you could have spent a couple million more to keep that guy around, especially since I think he is a good clubhouse guy, and I think that does matter, especially when you're headed for what might be another tough year. But you know, Peraza is young, he's versatile, and again, you know, he at one time had a ton of potential and a lot of hype around him, so this might be a good deal for him and the Red Sox. Maybe he comes in. I don't think Dustin Pedroia is going to play more than 50 games. I'll be shocked if he does, because I just think he's done. And I think Chavis will probably see more time at first base than anywhere else. So Peraza might end up becoming a big part of this team. And if he finds that potential like he had in 2018, then that could be good for the Red Sox. So I'm cautiously we'll see what happens.
I think you bring up some really great points. This guy's 6 years younger. He can steal bases. He is, like Brock Holt, incredibly versatile. He cannot pitch. He cannot catch. And I don't believe he can play first base. I think he's probably close to me at like 5 foot nothing. Jose Peraza, I'm curious, because he does not look like a big dude. He's 6 foot. Okay, so he's a lot of money. But known for a couple other things. I honestly think a part of it was just money. This guy's going to be getting $3 million plus incentives. Brock Holt was probably looking for something more. And in a year where the Red Sox are going to be penny pinching, that's going to make and break all the difference. Peraza is younger, like you mentioned. I'm curious to see what he can do. This is a great opportunity for Peraza to play in a bigger market, potentially get a multi-year deal after this. Maybe he can add playing first base to his repertoire and make a little bit more. Is he going to add the same punch that Mitch Moreland did? No. Is he going to get on base more? I hope so. So this was a you can't hate it. You have to just wait and see what happens move. And we did it for the bargain price of a lot less than $324 million.
This is probably one of the moves where you just kind of hope that this is going to be the, you know, the genius in Chaim Bloom, you know, where he's bringing that Tampa Bay magic, you know, to the Red Sox. And, you know, a lot of those Tampa moves as they happen, I'm like, oh, geez, you know, that wasn't that sexy. But quietly, you know, they had a very balanced, productive roster. And, you know, so hopefully that's what we get. I would have preferred Brock Holt for maybe a couple million more, as Jason said. I tweeted exactly that earlier. The one thing, you know, about Brock Holt is he plays literally seven positions, and he probably would pitch in the eighth inning of a game that were ahead by 10 runs or down by 10 runs. And if you let him, I have heard him say his fastball does top out at 88, which puts him right there with Brian Johnson. But and Holt is a good clubhouse guy. He's been extremely clutch off the bench. I'm going to miss him. I mean, I just think a guy like Holt just gives you so much stability, and hopefully we get it with Peraza. And, you know, so we'll see how it goes. But, I mean, you got some pieces where we don't know if they fit yet. Jason, you mentioned Pedroia. I'm highly skeptical he even makes a start. They said he won't be ready until maybe June or July. He's got to give you several minor league games. I mean, they've just kind of rammed him through, and then he just couldn't stay healthy. I listened to a podcast with him. He was on Bradford's show, and apparently his knee is a lot better. They did a lot more work to it, and he's working hard to come back. I'm extremely skeptical. But, you know, he's owed all that money, so, you know, what the hell. I'm not a Pedroia guy either, but we got bigger problems. A little bit of breaking news. This device died, so I don't have the stats in front of me, but the Red Sox have signed Martin Perez. I think he's a right-handed starter, most recently from Texas, if you guys want to pull his stats up. Not a very good pitcher. His, you know, ERA is well into the fours, and I think it was 5-something last year. His only decent season was 2013, but he does give a lot of innings, you know, much like Porcello does. So it just sounded like a move to make a move, you know. Porcello signs with the Mets today, so maybe this is the corresponding move, you know, that the Red Sox felt they needed to make. Any thoughts on him? I know he sucks. I mean, I've taking him as a buy low guy in DraftKings quite a bit and got burnt. So,
yeah. He had from what I remember, he had a decent first half with Minnesota last year. But his numbers, he did not finish well. 10-7 with a 5.12 ERA in total last season. He's not a strikeout guy. He's not a velocity guy. He's just kind of like you said, he's an innings guy, probably relies on ground balls. So I think that he's just kind of like another Wade Miley. You know, he's just going to be a guy that's on the back end of the rotation, and you hope that he can give you a lot of innings and an ERA that's respectable. But yes, his career ERA is 4.72. I mean, that's so this is what you're getting. You're getting just kind of another Wade Miley, I think. But again, you had to fill the spot that Porcello left with someone. So you kind of got a left-handed Rick Porcello from what it sounds like. So I don't know. We'll see how it goes.
What was the what's his salary for? Did they announce it yet?
$6 million.
Yeah. So another, again, penny pinching move. You save $4 million there. You save $2 million on Peraza. Not to say that they're complete garbage. They're not bad, but they're, you know, not the best options. You know, 8-3 before the All-Star break, like you mentioned, great first half of the year. Then dumpster fire, 2-5 as ERA rose by an entire run on the average, meaning it was worse than that to get to 5 points. I think it was 5.22. Did I see that? 5.12. Mm-hmm. So does great against certain teams, but gets rocked against teams that he has absolutely no relationship with or teams that he spent way too much time with. So basically, you're playing roulette with this guy. Another lefty option. The Red Sox love lefties. And maybe this is a perchance maybe we needed another lefty because, well, David Price is on the way out. Maybe.
Well, you know, where they did spend $9 million today, I mean, that probably means they do have a sense that they're going to make some moves here with at least one of the big contracts. You could probably move Bradley easily. That's $11 million right there. So we'll see what happens there, but not definitely nothing to be excited about. During the winter meetings, a couple of times throughout the week, the Astros cheating scandal got brought up. The commissioner basically gave an update that the investigation is still ongoing. It will probably go beyond the new year, and they have 76,000 emails to analyze, a bunch of text messages. He also said that this is the biggest investigation they have undertaken. So I'm extremely curious to see the penalties. As far as just the Astros go, we'll get to Cora in a second, but what's good enough for you guys? Like, what's a good enough punishment for Hinch and maybe the organization in itself? Jason, what are your thoughts?
I mean, I think Hinch he's absolutely going to get slammed with some kind of suspension. I don't know if I'm willing to say it should be the full season. That's in baseball. That's a lot to suspend a manager for a full 162 games. Feels like a lot, but they do keep reiterating that this is the biggest investigation we've ever undergone. This is one of the worst cheating scandals of all time in our sport. So if they really want to send a message, they might do what the NFL did to the Saints with that whole bounty gate thing and say, hey, head coach is gone for the whole year. Figure it out because we're not going to tolerate it. So I think if Hinch gets a massive suspension like that, I'll take it. I'd be happy with that.
Is a 30-day suspension, is that enough?
It's got to be, I would say at the minimum, it's got to be at least half the season. It's got to be like 80 games, something like that, at the minimum.
Okay. And Charlie, where are you at with this?
Two words, here. I think anything short of half the season would showcase that Major League Baseball treats certain teams with an unfair level of bias. If this was the Red Sox or the Yankees or the Cubs or I don't know, the Cardinals, the teams that have been relevant for well over a decade, minus a passing year and whatnot. I think that this is going to be the opportunity for Major League Baseball to send a message and say this will not stand. The fact that this is only the second issue that we've caught. How long has this gone on for? We have no idea. This could have been going on for years, and only now are we catching up on it. So there are unknown or unwritten team methods of getting an advantage, but this is not baseball. And if teams are resorting to something like this, then you start to wonder, okay, well, whose numbers got inflated by how much? And is this potentially not only the offense, but the pitching as well? So are some of these pitchers getting little hints, tips, and tricks? Maybe Garrett Cole really isn't worth $324 million. There's kind of like a moral here. I'm just 81 games, draft pick, send a message. This will not stand. This is unacceptable. Get it done.
Yeah, I agree with that. The draft pick has to be included too, because the Astros and all these teams, they love their draft picks. So that would absolutely send a message too. You take that away. Yeah.
I would be extremely dissatisfied if Hinch got less than a full year. I mean, I think this is an egregious scandal. I think it was very brazen. And it directly led to them winning a championship, and that's just not fair to everybody else who did play fair. And also, you had the incident last year, well, I should say two postseasons ago, when the Red Sox played them in the ALCS. Indians tipped us off. There's going to be a guy in the camera well, field side, opposite your dugout. He's going to be recording you. And he gets caught, he gets escorted out, and the Astros' reasoning was that they were recording us to make sure we weren't cheating. So, and MLB backed that. There was like a one-day investigation, then MLB comes out the next day. Yup, they were recording the Red Sox to make sure they weren't cheating. The investigation's over, that's it. And I thought it was an insult to my intelligence, and I think, where MLB backed them, they look a lot more stupid, in the wake of all that we know now. And I hope Major League Baseball is embarrassed, and that becomes a huge motivator to drop the hammer. I listen to a lot of podcasts, Buster Olney. I get baseball content, from everywhere, and a lot of insiders are saying they do expect something massive. So I just don't know what their definition of massive is, but less than a season, I would be disappointed. I would not be shocked if Jeff Lunau, the general manager, president, whatever he calls himself, I wouldn't be surprised if he gets a lifetime ban. We saw that happen with the Braves two or three off seasons ago, where they were abusing the international signing pools. They had to forfeit a lot of high-end prospects, and who I think were basically just re-entered the pool or whatever. And he was banned for life. AJ Preller of the Padres has gotten himself into a lot of controversy, had a 30-day suspension, will probably be banned for life, if another controversy happens. So I think the same could happen for Lunau, but I expect him to have his punishment to be severe one way or the other. But it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting. And with Alex Cora and Beltran, who, according to Ken Rosenthal, played central roles in this. So maybe that means they masterminded it. He doesn't use that exact keyword, but it looks like they did engineer the whole scheme. So what do we expect to happen to Cora at this point, Jason?
I mean, hopefully nothing more than, you know, a really heavy fine, or maybe he's, him and Beltran get 30 game suspensions as opposed to what Hinch is going to get. But you do have to be concerned if you're a Red Sox fan, because if that reporting is true, that him and Beltran were, you know, central figures in this and they played a key role in it, baseball's not going to, or they shouldn't let them off the hook that easy. So Cora and Beltran could both be facing suspensions. I wouldn't be surprised if it's 30 to 60 games for them, because again, if they were the architects of this and Hinch just kind of oversaw it, then Hinch will still get the biggest punishment, but yeah, they'll get hammered too, and they could get 30 to 60 games.
Charlie?
I think if they receive nothing, it would really sour me on watching anything Alex Cora does going forward. And I love the Red Sox, but if they do what they did with the last thing, and that's what I'm talking about with that unfair bias, where they swept it under the rug and the investigation lasted about the length of the Titanic movie, there are going to be teams that try even worse, more stupid, egregious ways of taking advantage of other teams that are not making the playoffs for the honorable reason, which is just not making it. Could I see Hinch getting suspended a year? Probably not. Could I see him getting half a season? Sure. Could I see Cora getting the same thing as he was a known offender, potentially the main perpetrator? Possibly close to the same thing. If he gets anything less than 30 days, I'm going to be disappointed. And like you, I'm going to feel like my intelligence was insulted, because I have thoughts. And it's going to be really interesting. This is similar to, I feel like, the whole kneeling thing for some people in the NFL. Some people have completely stopped watching football because they are against players kneeling. Is it the same thing? No. But to some regard, if you're saying it's okay to cheat, then you're opening the floodgates for all sorts of other things that could potentially happen.
I think what the Red Sox are going to be looking at here is what happens with Luno. If he gets a lifetime ban or even a full year suspension, I think Chaim Bloom might be a little nervous having a cheater in his dugout, because he's going to be subject to the same suspension Luno is if Cora has some shenanigans going on. And I just feel like if Cora's suspension is going to be half the season, I just think at this point, it just makes sense to get rid of him. The Red Sox are, you know, an image-conscious organization. If we have, like, another 108-win season, and maybe that was just a once-in-a-lifetime thing, but, you know, say we're exceeding 100 games, 100 wins, a couple seasons in a row, we're going to be more heavily scrutinized because of Alex Cora's history. And I just feel like He's a huge liability, and if we're signing Martin Perez and we're gonna have a transition year, let's see what Ron Renicki can do, who had a pretty good track record in 4 years with the Brewers. Or if they want to do a managerial search before the season starts, that's fine too. But I don't think Alex Cora is a make or break guy. I wrote an article on this, and he started following me the day after I published that. So I don't know. I think he was probably checking to see if leaks had come out, you know, just from the Astros, and might have stumbled on it that way. But nonetheless, I just feel like I would move on from him if his suspension is going to be lengthy.
It's not the worst idea. Yeah, I mean, the Red Sox do care about their image a lot. And as much as we all love Cora, and that love comes from the World Series in his first year, because obviously we'd feel differently if his first 2 years were just as bad as last year was. But yeah, I mean, if he's going to get suspended 81 games, and, you know, then you've got to deal with 81 games without him there. It's hanging over the team the whole time. It's a team that, like you said, is probably headed for a rough transition here. So there's going to be enough going on anyway. I mean, it wouldn't shock me if they said, you know what, Alex, like, we can't do this. You brought this on yourself. You were part of the biggest cheating scandal in Major League Baseball history. Like, we can't have you as our manager. And they move on from him. That would not shock me at all. But I do think a lot of it depends on what the punishments will be for Lunhao and what Major League Baseball decides, you know, how big Cora's involvement was and what they decide to do with him.
Any other thoughts, Charlie?
No, I think it's you know, it's a good point. I haven't thought about it, like getting rid of him, sacking Cora already. I think the Red Sox, why they might not sack him is because of that record-setting year. He was yet another Red Sox manager that came in year one, got the job done. So Francona did it in 04. John Farrell did it 2013. Cora did it 17. I don't know if there was another Red Sox. There might have been another Red Sox manager that won in his first season. But, I mean, we've been lucky to see three of the four since 2000, you know, since 2000 began. Three of those four World Series titles have been won by a manager in their first year. Could they completely change it up and get a new manager? Sure. I think the reason why he doesn't end up losing his job is because he won the World Series in 2017.
You know, just to underscore one other thing, you know, Jason, you just said, you know, it's one of the biggest scandals in the history of the league. And I agree with that. I think it is the biggest since the Black Sox scandal. I mean, one of the recent ones is Biogenesis, you know, where Rodriguez, Braun, Melky Cabrera all got caught up in that. And I just feel like, you know, throughout the steroid era, you can't say that one or two guys taking steroids on your team led to a championship. I mean, maybe it did, but it's just harder to lock that theory down. But when you go to this Astros scandal, all the players, all the coaches, the front office guys, the scouts, and the low-level guys that were beaten on the trash cans, like this, there was a few dozen people conservatively in on this, working systematically to make this work, and it led to a championship. I think that makes it one of the biggest scandals, if not the biggest. So, and the Red Sox manager might have been the mastermind of it. So we'll see what happens. I mean, I'm intrigued to know what the, you know, punishments will be, but just a pretty stunning turn of events. We're basically at the hour mark, so just a few more minutes. Yankees get Gerrit Cole. I really thought the Dodgers had a chance. I was kind of hoping that would be the way it went. That way I could laugh at the Yankees fans and be like, nobody wants to join your sacred organization, you know, because they all have this holier-than-thou, you know, temperament on it. And but we're going to face him for the next 9 years. What's your thoughts, Jason?
Yeah, it sucked to see that. I was hoping he'd go to the Angels or the Dodgers or just somewhere far away, not right in our backyard in New York there. Certainly it does make them the favorites in the AL East. I'm not sure if I'm ready to say it makes them, you know, an automatic World Series team. I think that's, you know, maybe jumping on it too soon. because I still don't love the rest of their rotation. I think they still have a lot of questions in that rotation as it pertains to, you know, Severino's health and Tanaka, and now they're looking at shipping out Jay Happ. So yeah, Cole definitely makes them scary, and they were scary to begin with, but you know, it's not guaranteed. They seem to add a big name free agent every season, and it's still been a decade since they've won it. So we'll see. Cole will definitely help them. He's, you know, if he's as good as he looked, and you know, we'll see. Maybe the cheating helped him out a little bit too. We don't know. But if he is, then yeah, they got their ace, they got their guy. That's great. But the American League got tougher. The White Sox got better. The Angels are getting marginally better. The Astros are still going to be there despite everything that's about to happen to them. Oakland's still hanging around. You know, Tampa's going to be pesky. They're going to compete. I do think the Red Sox will compete as well. So yeah, it was a huge signing for the Yankees, and it makes them very formidable, but I'm not ready to just pencil them into the World Series just yet. We'll see how it goes.
I think Gerrit Cole is a very interesting person to talk about. I think because of the team that he just came from, he becomes even that much more interesting and curious, because you look at his first 5 years in the bigs were in the National League, which statistically speaking it's the better league if you're a pitcher, because you again get that little cupcake putter every ninth time up. And he had one good year and four crappy years. And then he comes to Houston in the harder league and dominates. He goes from a 12-12, 4.26 ERA, 203 innings pitched with under 200 strikeouts, to a 15-5 record, sub 2.9 ERA, 200 innings pitched, just cracked it, and threw almost 100 more strikeouts. Following year, wins 20 games, ERA goes down again, throws a couple more innings, throws an additional 50 strikeouts. So do I think he's a cheater? I don't know. Is he a really good pitcher? Absolutely. Few people can touch that fastball, and I can't take that away from him. Was I shocked that the Yankees got him? No, because the Yankees have not been the Yankees for a very long time. And after they got Giancarlo Stanton, which completely blew up in their face, has not lived up to a dollar of that contract, they needed to do anything to be relevant. Because if you're a Yankees fan and you do nothing, or if you're a Yankees ownership, you do nothing for those fans, they're going to start to question if you really want to win. They've won how many World Series titles since 2000?
One.
That's it. One. And they've spent hundreds of millions of dollars. And the year that they won, they opened up the purse and they just said, you get hundreds of millions of dollars and you get hundreds of millions of dollars. And they got it done the Yankee way. This is them going back to the way that George did it. They're doing something that very few teams, if any, are willing to do. Can I justify spending $36 million annually to a guy who's going to pitch who's 30 years old? He's going to be playing, you know, 4 or 5 years from now. He can opt out. Is he going to opt out of that? You think he's going to leave over $145 million on the table? You are out of your mind. The Yankees, this contract could not have been more stupid, but smart at the same time. Smart in the sense that no one's going to have – you don't have to face Gerrit Cole for the next 9 years. That's really good. Why does this suck? Because at age 36, 37, 38, 39, he's going to be making over $1 million per start. And that's assuming he doesn't get injured or miss any significant time. Yankees are contenders. There's no question. But guess what? If you don't win a minimum of two World Series in the next 9 years, you failed miserably.
You guys make, you know, good points. Especially where, you know, what's he going to be like, you know, in the Yankees pitching program? Can he sustain the dominance? you know, whatever. I will point out that Charlie Morton seemed to do it with the Rays and was a top three Cy Young guy. So, but I think I think his durability is going to be good, you know, much like Scherzer's has been, Verlander's for much of his 30s. I mentioned John Lester earlier. I think he's going to be of that ilk. A lot of, you know, baseball people rave about his mechanics. He takes good care of himself. So that's good. It's a good contract, but where the issues come is it a good contract for the Yankees where they're currently at with their payroll? And I don't think it is. The Yankees were over the luxury tax last year. Luxury tax threshold, $208 million. They checked in at $223. So they went over it, you know, and this year we'll pay, you know, the 20% for the first year. With his signing, it's gone from 223 to 249 at last check. They did sign Gardner today, so I don't know if that shoots it up already. I'm not great when it comes to, you know, the numbers in that regard, but I mean it should be around 260. So they're going to be, what's that, $52 million over the threshold. So they'll take the 30% tax, and then next year, I can't imagine they're going to get below it. I know they are trying to get rid of Jay Happ, but he's 37, 38 years old. I just don't see it happening without them eating, you know, probably half the contract. I don't think they can get rid of Stanton. I don't think anybody's going to touch that with a 10-foot pole with 8 years remaining. I just don't see where the money is going to come off, and I know they do lose Tanaka next year. Ellsbury will mercifully be off their books. They'll lose Paxton, maybe Britton. But they're going to have to replace these guys as well, you know. And maybe the dollar amounts won't equal what's coming off. But I still don't see them getting below it. So if they're going to stay above it for three straight years, that's a 50% tax. And Judge and Sanchez aren't even making big money yet. And you got to think they're going to at least try to keep Judge. I can see them trading Sanchez at some point. But if they were to extend Judge, let's say, just say he gets, just to make the math easy, let's say he gets a 10-year, $30 million contract, $300 million. So that would be $30 million a year. The 50% tax on that makes it a $45 million a year contract until they can get under it. It's just not sustainable. And I just think that the timing was bad for them to make an investment like that. If they would have been willing to give up Clint Frazier and Miguel Andujar in 2017, they could have got him then and at least had him on cheap money and maybe stayed away from Stanton or maybe stayed away from Happ or maybe got the payroll in order. But I think Cashman just gets sick of playing second fiddle and he made the move, and it was an emotional move. And, you know, he seemed to have a philosophy where if he had a great bullpen and an explosive lineup, that would offset a mediocre rotation, and that failed. And now he's got Cole. And so from a Red Sox perspective, I'm a little bit of an optimist. And I know the CBA is going to come up. The negotiations are going to get started, and maybe the threshold gets higher, or maybe they get rid of it. I doubt that'll happen, but I don't think it was the right timing for the Yankees to do this. And Garrett Cole has said he's all about winning. And if that's the case, he really should have signed with the Dodgers, because their payroll situation is in order. They got a great core, and I think that's a team that could win. And we'll see what they do. They're looking at Madison Bumgarner. They're connected to Dellin Betances. And one other point about the Yankees as well. While they are astronomically above the threshold, they're probably going to be more active doing trades. So being that high above the threshold is just going to weaken their farm system, because they're going to have to eat up some of their trade capital. And as of tonight, they are negotiating with the Brewers for Josh Hader. So it's already beginning. You know, they're already going to start losing prospects. And so that's where I'm at as far as the Cole signing goes.
They're doing it the Yankee way, which is you're not doing it with the farm. You're doing it by buying all of the talent. And in the 90s, when I started really, really paying attention to baseball, I was like, so it's the Yankees versus Major League Baseball. Because their salary, it was like 100. It was something crazy. I was like, oh, my God, this team is 150 or 160 million. Oh, but the Tampa Bay Devil Rays are at 18 million. And they're competitive. I remember Alex Rodriguez at one point had a higher annual salary than the entire Tampa Bay Rays team combined. What? And this is what's happening. Now, is Gerrit Cole going to be making more than some teams combined? No, that's not going to happen anymore. But you're absolutely right. You know, you look at some of the teams that are built to do well going forward. Dodgers are in great shape. The one thing that is going for the Yankees, kind of, is the fact that Aaron Judge, Gary Sanchez, and Gleyber Torres aren't due big contracts until 2023, 2024, which is when some of those other bigger contracts are going to be off. By then, 2023, 2024, Giancarlo Stanton will either be out of the game entirely or not wearing a pinstripe uniform. So that's one. Hap won't be there anymore. Cole will still be there. Some of the other names that people know in New York, they probably won't be there either. The Yankees will have to blow up their team in order to maintain keeping one of those two stars. There's no way they're keeping Gleyber Torres and Aaron Judge in the future. It cannot happen.
And that's another excellent point. I mean, Judge has 3 years left before, you know, free agency. And his last year of arbitration, though, will probably be a lot like Mookie's, where Mookie is projected at $27 million. So he's only got two more really relatively cheap seasons left. He's projected $6 million this year, probably will double or triple that next year, depending on how big of a year he has. But also consider this, just with their current situation, their corner infield – not very well settled right now. You got Andujar and Urshela on the third base side, and maybe Voit or Mike Ford on the right side. They could probably find an adequate, you know, solution between them, but nothing lights out. And then with the outfield, that's kind of unsettled as well, because Stanton's probably going to DH at this point for the most part. And then you got Gardner, pretty reliable there as far as durability. And then you got Judge, who has spent significant time the last two seasons on the injured list. So, I mean, he's 6'7", 280 pounds. We don't really know, you know, what to expect of him, you know, as the years pass. And other than that, I mean, who do they have? Hicks, who's recovering from Tommy John and could likely pull his hammy, you know, 2 weeks after coming back, extremely injury prone, terrible deal. You know, they didn't learn anything from the Ellsbury deal to give Hicks a 7-year deal, and he's only exceeded 100 games twice in his career. That's just, you know, that right there is the perfect example of why I think Cashman is one of the most overrated GMs in the league. And you know, and they got Clint Frazier as well, but he's a defensive nightmare, and every time he opens his mouth in front of the camera, the fan base wants to kill him, you know. So they got some issues in the outfield, the corner infield, and that's going to need to be addressed. But, Jason, what were, you know.
Yeah, it was funny. When you mentioned Aaron Hicks, I was actually just looking at his contract. It's horrible. I mean, 7 years. $70 million. He's due to make $12.5 million in 2026, when he'll be 36 years old, and who knows if he's even going to be playing by then. I agree. I think they're about to make a stupid mistake at third base, because it sounds like they're going to trade Andujar and they're going to go with Gio Urshela as a third, as their full-time third baseman, because he had one good season with them last year after really doing nothing with the Indians his entire career. And they're going to bank on Urshela hitting 330 again, like he did in the second half of last season. And it sounds like they're going to ship out Andujar, because they still need to get bullpen help and starting pitching help. And he's going to be one of the young guys that, like you talked about, he's, you know, even though he played a full season, he's still one of their young talents from the farm system that they're just going to get rid of because, you know, hey, we got Gio Urshela and, you know, we believe in that. And they're going to get rid of Andujar for pitching help, and that'll just be another young bat out the door. I think Clint Frazier at some point is going to get traded because I just don't think he's going to work out there, and they're not going to find a spot for him. So that's another young talent that'll go out the door. So there's still a lot of questions around them, and most of them goes to the starting rotation. Sure, Gerrit Cole is great. Okay, there's your number one. James Paxton's probably your two. He's okay. He didn't exactly light the world on fire like they thought that he would when they traded for him, and he's only got 1 year left on his deal anyway. Tanaka's elbow is a ticking time bomb. So at some point, like, he's a year older, and I don't know. I think that he's wildly inconsistent. Severino, they thought, was going to develop into an ace, and then he got injured, and then he got fat, and just was ineffective last season. So yeah, they still have a ton of questions. Like, things are not, they're not 100% bound for the playoffs or the World Series just yet. They've got a lot of stuff to clean up. So, congrats on Gerrit Cole, I guess, but you know, they still got a lot of issues to address.
Yeah, and I'm, it's, again, curious as to what type of baseballs they're going to be hitting this year. Because last year, I mean, July 1st came around, and there were six or eight guys right around 30. And I'm like, holy geez, like, all these guys are going to break Maris's record in the same season. And the better home run months were just starting, you know, July and August. When it gets hotter, the balls tend to fly. And then nobody got there. I think Pete Alonso hit, what, 53 or something like that? And that was the most.
Yeah.
So the balls changed. The balls changed in the second half. And, you know, I'd rather have normal baseballs. The strikeout and home run ball that we saw the first half, I'm just not into it. I like the base hits. I like the base running, the stealing, the small ball. I think that's more exciting. So, it'll be interesting to see if that impacts the Yankees, you know, if at all. Obviously, Judge is still going to mash at least 35, but you know, we'll see how that goes. The other big signing, I'm not going to get into the Strasburg. I mean, he went home, and, you know, that's obviously a good fit for him. But the other big signing is Anthony Rendon to the Angels. Jason, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, my thought was basically, okay, congrats on getting Rendon. You still kind of suck. great. You paid all this money for Rendon, who's really good. He's an awesome player, and, you know, congrats. But, yeah, you've got him and Trout, and then who else? I mean, I don't even know who their number one starter is.
Well, they got Pujols, who I think turned 60 pretty quick.
Oh, good. That's good. Yeah, they're still paying him, so... and, you know, hopefully Ohtani comes back and, you know, is able to stay healthy and, you know, produce for them. But yeah, their rotation still absolutely stinks. Their bullpen is just as bad. And their lineup outside of Trout, Ohtani, and Rendon leaves a lot to be desired. I mean, and Geraldton Simmons is good. He's, you know, he's decent. He's more known for his defense, really. I know they're high on this Fletcher kid at second base, but again, he seems like just kind of an average hitter to me. So, yeah, I mean, Rendon's awesome, and hopefully, you know, he provides well for them, but they're still going to finish third, maybe even still in last place in their division. They're just still not a good team.
And they got Upton, who can mash, but will probably have at least 200 strikeouts, so which is a big contract and a terrible one, but... what were your thoughts, Charlie, when you saw the headline that Rendon is going to Anaheim?
You know that there's like a little video, like one of those clips where you just see the guy banging his head on the side of the airplane because there's like someone screaming or like there's something happening. I remember being on a flight where these two kids are screaming and all you see is this guy, his eyes are like bloodshot, and he looks at me, he just motions to like bang his head against the airplane. And that's literally the reaction that I had when I said that. I said, what are you doing? What is going through your mind? You have Albert Pujols, you have Mike Trout on your team, you just added Rendon, Fletcher is up and coming, you have Cole Calhoun who's also on the team, who did really well last year. Your best statistical pitcher, I'm sorry, the leader with wins last year is no longer with us. That's how bad their pitching staff is. And I hate to say it like that, but they are thinking that buying offense is going to win the season. And here's the thing. At the end of the day, pitching wins ball games. Your rotation, Andrew Heaney, 4-6 record, 4.91 ERA, 18 games played. Jaime Barria, 4-10, 6.42 ERA, 13 started games, 19 total games. You have Griffin Canning, who I was really high on, 5-6 record, 4.58 ERA, 17 games started. Tyler Skaggs, who has since passed, 7-7, 4.29, 15 games started. One starting pitcher of those guys exceeded 100 strikeouts. I'm sorry. Am I missing something?
I think what's going on here is the owner, Artie Moreno, loves to get involved. I think he's the Jerry Jones of MLB, and his kids need to just send him away and let some baseball people make some decisions. They needed pitching in the worst way. And I think players know that the organization is stupid. I just think that they feel like if they go there, they have no chance to win. And they need pitching so bad. And they could have, for what they paid for Rendon, they probably could have got Bumgarner and Ryu and at least had a semblance of a rotation. But they got Rendon, and I'm like, it's just so tragic on so many levels because Mike Trout's never going to win a World Series. It's just not going to happen there. They haven't won a single playoff game since he turned pro, and they made the playoffs once, and they got swept. I think that was by the Royals that year. And so they've never won a playoff game in the Mike Trout era, and they're just not going to get there. And Rendon, I mean, he just went from an organization that was a perennial powerhouse, and I know they were a dumpster fire in the playoffs up until this year, but he's never going to win another one. He's just going to waste away. It's just so tragic, and I couldn't even believe Madden wanted to go there. I'm like, dude, you just came from the Rays were a brilliant organization, and Epstein, I don't know what the hell happened over there. They made some really bad moves with Hayward, Darvish, Chatwood, I think his name is. Just a ton of really, really bad moves. But they did, still get a World Series. That's just such a trash organization. And I couldn't believe that Rendon wanted to go there. And the Rangers wanted him, and that's close to home for him and would have been an interesting destination. But, I don't know. The Angels are terrible. I can't believe their fan base is just even into it. And they get a lot of fans into that stadium that just faithfully follow that team. And I'm like, you guys just don't even know.
Yeah, I mean, they might not even win 80 games next year, with Rendon.
They won't do it. They won't have a starter that gets 12 wins. I'll say it right now. I will be more than willing to place a bet over under 11.5 wins. They don't get it. 80 wins, over 79.5. I'm saying under. They can't do it. You can't. Their pitching staff is going to fall apart worse than Boston's did this year. We had like 2 1/3 starters this season. I think like beginning of August, we're like, yep, we're going to have our relievers do 2 innings a day.
You can easily make the case that they're probably a fourth place team at best. I know Houston's a mess right now with the controversy, but still got a pretty good team that's going to compete. I feel the same way about Oakland. Texas, you know, showed some life last year if they can kind of make some moves. Lance Lynn had a resurgence. Mike Minor, you know, had a nice season. So, I mean, I think Texas easily could beat them. And I just, yeah. I was really surprised at that one. I thought he would end up either with Texas or maybe the Dodgers or whatever. But, all right. My device died, so I'm gonna boldly assume nothing's happened as far as the Red Sox went with their big day with Peraza and Perez. But yeah, any final thoughts before we wrap?
No, I was actually just looking up the Rangers depth chart because I want to see is it actually possible, and it is. They have more pitching than the Angels. They just added Kyle Gibson, who, you know, again, not great, but he'll at least get them 8 or 9 wins. They've still got Minor. They still got Lynn. Like, the Rangers notoriously never have pitching. If the Rangers have more pitching than you, you really suck. Like, that's really bad. So I wouldn't be shocked if the Angels finish in last place. And Rendon's just going to waste away there. He's going to, you know, he's going to put up great numbers, but it sucks. He should have gone somewhere else.
I think they'll still beat Seattle. You know, they're just not really trying at the moment. Just trying to, you know, build the farm. Any final thoughts, Charlie?
No, I mean, I think it's just cute. You see, the Angels had only one guy exceed 100 strikeouts. The Texas Rangers had two that hit 200 or more. Granted, Mike Minor got a cupcake 200th strikeout. Shouldn't happen, but it did.
I remember that.
Wait, did he ever? Yeah.
I thought that was complete BS, and that should never have happened. There should be an asterisk next to that 200. And the Texas Rangers had a closer that exceeded, had 100 strikeouts. So how bad does your pitching have to be that another team's closer, who no one even knew about before 2019, Jose Leclerc, I'm pretty sure he's been in the league less than 3 years total.
Yeah, he's a young guy.
16. I rest my case. This guy has been good for the last 2 years, but if a closer on another team has more strikeouts than someone in your starting rotation or everybody in your starting rotation, you need to start spending some money in the starting rotation. Los Angeles, I hope you're watching. You need pitching.
Oh, it's okay, though. They added Dylan Bundy. That'll fix everything.
Oh, they got Bundy? Give him the series. Give it to him.
Yeah, he could get 150 strikeouts. But he could have Chris Tillman syndrome, though. You know, just be a flash in the pan. But, yeah, and he has a serial killer, you know, last name, so... all right. Well, I don't know when the next show will be. It could be soon. Typically, I just wait for a development to happen, you know, and we go by that. So we'll see who's available to record on that night. So I would expect a show pretty soon, though, especially if Price gets moved. Maybe Mookie gets moved. You know, his market has been kind of quiet. You know, unless maybe he gets packaged in with Price, who knows? But we'll see everybody within the next, you know, several days, and take care.
Listen up, football fans! You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNCs apply. In app only.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.